Brass Tax, good morning.
Morning, Dennis. How are you?
I am all right. And you?
I wish you well.
Well, thank you.
Dennis?
Yes, sir.
I want to clear up something here. Mm-hmm. I listened to this program for the last 7 or 8 minutes. The guy was very into this whole no concept of politicizing the comment he made re the cost
cap. Yeah.
But let me say this to you. He needs to ask Mr. Cummins what became of the headstone that was erected for Jackie Opel a couple of years ago and removed without anybody knowing who removed it and why. That's the first question for Mr. Cummins. Two, ask Mr. Cummins why all the years he spent at the cemetery still look in such a dilapidated state. I don't know if he's trying to push an agenda, but if he's trying to push one, the evidence is glaringly not in his favor. And I want to say this. Both Coscap and Clyde B. Jones from home must be commended for, after 48 years, coming and erecting something that people can actually go and visit.
Yep.
But I don't want any credit, Dennis Johnson. I just want to say to you that last year, early last year, I went to Westbury Cemetery and took pictures of the dilapidated state of the grave and put it on Facebook.
Yeah, I saw that.
I have no doubt that would have been the catalyst for the action that we eventually saw. I don't want no credit for it, Dennis Johnson. I just want that the cultural industries in this country recognize that where Jackie Opel is buried along that northern line of the cemetery, that several other Barbadian entertainers have been buried in almost the same
lane. Yeah.
And something can be done about it. So I don't know why he on radio pushing any apology for Mr. Cummins. Mr. Cummins didn't do nothing for the cemetery to make it look no better. That's all I want.
Don't run off yet. I want to ask this question of you, because I also asked a similar question of him. The move to finally recognize the resting place of Jackie Opel, do you see it as being a springboard for something more than just something we did and then, you know, we can fade away in the next 2 weeks or month when we find something else to focus on? Is it going to galvanize us to begin to take a second look at how we recognize culture, how we understand and do something about really creating an industry around culture?
You know, you asked a question and answered it in a sense. You know how we are? In the thick of things, everybody's interested. When it dies down, that's the end of it, right? But here's the hope that I've got in all of this. I believe that you've got some interested people in COSCAP, some very interested people in COSCAP, who are aware of the non-treatment of artists over the years, and who I believe will pay a bit more attention to these things now. More attention must be paid to these things. We all know the plight of the artists, Dennis. You and I have been in this industry for a long time.
Yeah.
We know that these fellas, if they don't make little money and put down over the years, they will get buried in a plastic bag.
If they get buried at all,
Or if they get buried at all, because you might find them by the wayside. We have a situation here where COSCAP and a few of the other people who have educated COSCAP are helping them to understand that, look, we have to reach out to all artists. I still think that there's a lot of room for COSCAP to create other concepts too. Because I believe COSCAP should educate these people about the various insurance policies that are available to them if they would only invest in them. For instance, Dennis, there is the peace assured policy offered by several insurance companies that you can bury yourself
at
a minimum fee every month. So that when you die, you don't have to worry about if you can get put in a plastic bag or not. I have done it, and I feel good about it myself.
Yeah.
But I am not gonna expect the big law thing to happen here, because I want to say to you, I was pretty disappointed in the cultural industries too. Because after all this time, successive governments have never done anything in this regard for the artist. And you have a private company or a company looking after the interest of the Barbadian artists, because indeed there are. And Erica asked, and she made a comment about the amount of money that leaves this country mm-hmm. as a result of music not being played belonging to Barbadians. And I said many years ago that all the government of this country had to do is to declare that
60%,
we can go 60% local, 40%. Yeah. But Dennis, I've been making this call for years.
Yeah, we've heard that call over and over, yeah, yeah.
You know, and some ignorant body tell me that I work at a radio station, I could do, I ain't own a radio station in Barbados.
Neither do I. You know, and the sad truth is, and I know you would know this, a lot of it is determined by public demand. And if the programmers feel that public demand not going with it, they're not going to go with it. You had a program director at this institution that was canned because it was not accepted that it was going to happen. The advertisers didn't want it that way. Look, the fight is going to be a long one, my friend, but you've been in it for quite a while. I doubt you're going to give it up now. And, you know, all we could hope to do is influence those who come after, my friend.
I ain't giving up, but what I am very aware of, because I do my homework, mm-hmm. and when I hear people come on the radio and make these statements and try to make people feel glorified, I would glorify you when I could drive into the cemetery and see that the cemetery is a place where I would like to come and visit. Listen, the most historical part of Barbados is West Bay Cemetery. All the history that's buried there, it's amazing.
Yep.
And yet, people have sat back over the years and allow it
to fall into that pit. And sir, you know, and I'll tell you what's interesting. Eh? Why are we having this discussion? People are asking, what's the interest in cemetery? Anybody want to go to a cemetery? You know, what's the big thing about cemeteries? You know, because there are always people who don't see it the way you see it. Yeah. And that's life. My friend, it is good hearing you. Always good to have a chat with you. And hopefully, we'll be able to put our heads and our voices together on a couple of these. 4341790. You can also reach us at brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net, or you can send a WhatsApp message, which seems to be a popular way of communicating with us, 2665-VOB. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Johnson.
How are you, sir?
Well, it is not too late for me to say Happy New Year.
No, it's not. It's not. The year is still young. Yes,
anyhow,
Mr. Kelvin.
Yes, I was very much intrigued when I heard the good brother who spoke to you, mm-hmm. who is seemingly convinced that there is something called demonic infestation.
Infestation, yeah.
I would love to be able to contact him, and I want to just call you to ask your permission to give my number, that perhaps if he's listening, he would be able to get me. I would certainly like to have a discussion with him. And okay. I will give you the number.
No problem.
It's 2... Uh-huh.
Oh, he said, well, the producer says he wants to take it off air, but, I mean, you seem quite willing to give it on air, but yes, sir. Ah, he says to send it to WhatsApp. I don't know why he's trying to protect your number, but, you know. 4341790, while he does that, let's see if we can have a conversation while he tries to get that. Let me read this to you. It says, good morning, Mr. Johnson. I'm a concerned parent with a child at the Blackman Gollop School. The children were home since last week, and we parents were sent emails saying the school was officially closed for the week. Now it is a new week, and no word has been sent, so some of us kept our children at home. I decided to pass by the school to see what was going on, and some children were there not doing anything, and the principal said the school is open because she's not heard from the ministry to say to close the school. And parents can take their children home according to how they feel. Which parents are doing as I write? Mr. Johnson, I think that word is left out, burnt all weekend. That school has had no environmental cleaning, and the Ministry of Education allowed teachers and our children back into the school. The union needs to go down there and assess the situation with urgency. And people from the ministry need to get up and go there too. I'm totally fed up and stressed. Please read this for me. The Black Moon Golf School has certainly been in the news quite often, and I am sure we'll get an update as to what the situation is. And someone asked, what was the name of the insurance policy? It was Peace Assured that was mentioned by the previous caller. 4341790. Brass Tacks, good afternoon. Okay, my producer is using his telephone time, so let me continue to catch up on the WhatsApp messages, including one that says, Westbury Cemetery was once a place where young people would go on Sunday afternoons to lime. It happened to be the place where my father met my mother and where many loves have blossomed. I think there was a calypso called Love in the Cemetery. I'm not sure that in today's environment it's going to be such a wise thing. Mr. Kamabach is trying to reach me to have a discussion on vehicles.
I'm here, Dennis.
Good afternoon, Mr. Kamabach, sir. I expected a call from you. How are you, sir?
You could call me Erskine.
Hello, Erskine. How are you? Man?
I know me that pretty me.
There are a couple of questions I wanted to ask you.
Go ahead.
One was the passage of the road traffic amendments. I know everyone was focused on cellular phones, but the act actually mentioned all sorts of other devices. And I wanted to know, you as a radio operator, one, and the tour coaches that use headphones, microphones, what was the reaction, if any, from them on the passage of this legislation? Because I didn't see too much on it.
I drafted something pertaining to it already, and I'm looking into dealing with it at a level which I can handle. And I was talking to two lawyers pertaining to it, and I was getting advice on them relative to it. That is with TB. Whenever there is a hurricane, I have to get out of my house and get on the mobile because I have a CB radio.
Right.
And most of us be with communicating
to the fellows in
relevant areas to point out where the damages are, road falling, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of people don't know that the BCB area, which is Barbados Digital Science Radio Association, they do a whole heap of work. They communicate even at functions like the crop over is well appreciated in transmitting messages. That's how some of the messages get to the police and so on, in between the crowds and so on. Mm-hmm. And even then, some guys have to be in vehicles. So if I'm in Tanjung area and St. Joseph area, and I'm on my mobile, which has the radio and communication device, I have to transmit messages. Maybe I have to get out in the rain and send the message back. And I think that some of those need to be looked at. I find it kind of difficult. And even with the learner driver situation, I'm driving and stuff. If my phone rings and I'm in the left safety, I shouldn't answer that phone. That's what the law says, that I cannot answer that phone. I have to maybe pull off my way to let all the others all go on me and stuff. And I know that I can answer the phone and they will do what I'm doing, but in their belief, it's a
distraction.
So that is one of the things. It says clearly, no one should drive or operate a vehicle on any road. I'm using a cellular phone. It also states clearly about
other telecommunication equipment. Yeah, I read that part.
Driver operate a vehicle on a road or highway while at the same time holding, manipulating, talking, or using a cellular phone. Also capable of receiving or transmitting.
That's the part I paid attention to.
Text message. But I ain't got no problem with the cellular phone. Because the cellular phone, I can tell you, I already answered my phone. And I was going up a particular street. I knew we had to turn right. After I passed the road that I was going into, I recognized, where fast are you going? It happens. It can happen. But in a radio communication device, like a CB radio or a ham operator or ship-to-shore radio, I got a little difficulty in that one.
Well, how about the fellows who, as I said, the to drivers who use
headphones
and microphones.
They're disadvantaged because my belief, we don't hear any accidents with them, but my belief is that now they would not have that device over their head talking to these people in the vehicles. Mm-hmm. Those guys who go through the country with the Jeeps, they don't want a first, third, a second person. Or they'll have to shout.
Or hang a microphone from the roof.
Or they'll have to hang a microphone from the roof. But I have device in my vehicle. All my vehicles have device. They have one thing I have in all my vehicles, backup cameras and forward cameras. I got dash cams all through the vehicle, front and outside. Everything that goes on around my vehicle, I can send a student information on their WhatsApp and let them see what they did on the driver's license, et cetera, whatever. And I have a device that if the phone rings or so on, it's not only the Bluetooth. I have another device I had for 2 years now. I got in Ohio a few years back. My friend and I bought about 12 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I can use that without touching the phone. When the phone rings, that was on, it automatically answers and it can speak from wherever I am. So I don't have to use the phone. But I mean, for the guy who doesn't have it, and I don't think it is that unless I can see with a driver, but the person in the other seat, I got a problem. Because two people driving that vehicle at the same time, you know, they learn a driver.
And the instructor.
And listen, to learn a driver is way better than a lot of us that got like
this. You keep saying so, sir. It's something.
A lot of footage out there with things, nonsense that we do as drivers. And not only that, one thing that bothered me, right? Why is it that I can get up this morning, walk through my door with two things tucked in my ears, and the phone on beside me, and I can walk all the way down Blackwater Road up the University Hill, and not only that, I walk on the left side of the road, not walking on the side facing the traffic, I walk on the left side of the road. And that's something flying off you, what I don't even
hear. You can't hear. You don't know. Yeah.
And when you pass next to me, listen, Dennis, you can hear the nasty music that is coming from it, or whatever it is, not necessarily that, whatever is coming from it, you can
the classical
hear
music
past that person. So that means it's so loud. But there's nothing to tell them not to do it. They see, but they can do it. And people on bicycles riding and have their ears closed.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
You understand? Yeah. This law, I think this law would also speak to the bicyclists. You shouldn't be doing that. You know, and some it happens so often, and they have these big masks over the ears and they listen to music. Yeah. All those are things that are more
dangerous.
Sitting in the left side seat. Teachers don't want to drive any phone answers. Another thing too is the bicyclist.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you one I see Saturday, and I stopped to take a picture. And I stop him. I said, "Boss, stop me a minute. Stop." He pull up. He said, "Yeah." He said, "Wait, I see." I said, "Yeah." The guy from downstairs who was talking down there. He didn't realize it was. He said, "Well, I like the creativity here, though. Well, how you get this? How you come up with this?" He said, "You must have a change strap." He has a helmet that you wear on the construction site.
Mm-hmm.
And he took a big handkerchief, put it over the top of it.
And tie it under his chin.
I can't get a picture. You don't say, no, man, I want a publicity. Otherwise, I can't take a picture. I would have loved to take a picture of him.
But listen, on a serious note, huh?
Yeah.
And not that that's not a serious note. The challenge with any of these regulations is a matter of enforcement and it's a matter of observation. I still see people driving and texting and talking to each other.
No, you know what they're doing? They phone outside these things.
Well, not only that.
You could tell because you get it, looking down, looking at the phone.
So that now brings the question of the manipulation of GPS or touch screens. Yeah. It also brings into question, somebody sent a message asking me, if the person sitting on the bar, game bar, go wear a helmet too. You know, people come up with all these things once you have a law. And that's why I asked about the ATVs, because I've seen ATVs with seat belts, but they're not being used. We have trikes on the road. We have three-wheel cabs on the road. We have all sorts of other vehicles on the road and being used to transport people.
Let me go one by one. You see the APV? Let me talk about the APV first. There are two classes there.
All right.
One is a car and one is a motorcycle.
One is a car and one is a motorcycle.
Yeah, one is severe. You can wear a helmet with one, but I think as they go to renew them, they're going to change all.
Uh-huh.
But one is classified like a car. You will find that you'll have to wear a helmet. Uh-huh. And the other one, the motorcycle wear a helmet. The other one is a car. But I think as time goes on and they change, go back to relicense them, they will automatically be made as a vehicle that should carry a helmet.
I have a note here for you, sir, that says The law exempts emergency vehicles on duty, inclusive of the Department of Emergency Management. So if you're a member of that organization, you have nothing to worry about.
Yeah, we comprehend that. We know that.
Okay.
Everybody's not a member of the association. Some people come out and help do things during certain days that are members of the BCBRA.
I know that, Mr. Straker here is one of those people,
They might not be members of the emergency management. Or about the motorcycle now. A motorcycle, the rider and the pinion rider must carry a helmet.
Mm-hmm. I understand where you're coming from, sir. I have seen people with locks. I won't call them Rastafari because I have no idea. And they have these German helmets perched on the back of their heads or way up at the top. And it really can't do nothing. It's covering their hair. But other than that, it really ain't doing nothing.
That is not on the back of the head, it's on the back of the hair.
Sorry, the back of the hair. Yes, sir. And it really ain't doing anything.
That is not a helmet. So therefore,
it's not a helmet? They're wearing a helmet, man.
It's a disadvantage, but a helmet is very important. I mean, I saw a guy...
I agree, you know. I don't disagree with that.
I saw a guy that did not have a helmet on yesterday with a bicycle. But I am glad that he fell. I'm sorry that he got some injury. His view was up in the air. He came through that valley. And he was on his bicycle. And he shifted the bicycle. And he and the bicycle touched. He said, what? And right at the corner of a wall, his head was just above the iron straight loose. And he got a gun in a hole of his head. But if any real drop, it wobbles, that's why I'm off. He should have on a helmet. Then we would have been okay, we'd not be okay. But the thing is, you know what I mean? You got more coming from? There's also a part of the law that speaks about that. Both wheels must be on
the ground. Yeah.
There's a section of the law that speaks about that. Do you have the act, or you want me to send you a copy?
I have the act. I just have not had a chance to go through the entire act.
To peruse it.
To go through the entire act. I want to go through it in detail for a couple of reasons. One of the things that I find, sir, and I must tell you it is a slight concern of mine, is that when we pass regulations, I am not sure how thorough a check is done to see if it... counteracts, if it negates other pieces of legislation that then have to be adapted to suit. I think sometimes we put legislation in place and then, you know, after some check-in, somebody finds that it either counteracts something that's in effect already or causes some kind of body to have to go back and look at it.
Allow me to explain something here, too.
Mm-hmm.
This is not by night thing that was done within the last week or two.
Right. I know it has been in
copies,
in place for a while.
I have copies of documents where I was also a member of a group that met and dealt with this. And the headline, the front part of this document here is draft amendment, plan amendment to the Wisconsin Act 295 laws of Barbados, Rep. CP Note 1051 NCW Government 02. And it was the fourth month, the 25th, 2012. So from all that time, we were perusing these things.
Right. But let me say this to you. Perusing the thing is one thing, eh?
Yes.
One of the things that we miss is engagement of the public early.
10-4.
And
you want me to use a CB turn 10-4?
Yeah, okay. I I'm a CB, so I know.
Roger.
Mm-hmm,
so, I mean, it's like they were being looked at even from all the way back in 2006. Things were looked at, and it's even going. No one be political about it. Even the waterworks, the waterway that was looked at before 2008, and all these things. Some things came to the notice of persons involved that we need to do this and we need to do that. Then to go before other people. You have a certain group of people who looked at this World Traffic Act. We were looking at this World Traffic Act amendments, regulation, etc. And it went on and on and on to other avenues. We're those persons in authority then who would have the legal brains or greater brains than some of us in that atmosphere went ahead and do some things. But people believe that they just got up
one day and do it.
This is what we're going to do. But no, it's not so. Think in that it'll take so long to burn.
Right. And the challenge with that, Erskine, is this. Because it takes us so long to do things, by the time we do it,
it is
already obsolete because something else has taken over. Look, we have situations in Barbados, right, where tradition has become so much a part of how we live. For example, yeah. people asking about barring somebody on a bicycle, right?
Yeah.
No. In countries where people don't bar people on a bicycle.
You can't bar somebody
on a bicycle, right? They would have no problem of whether or not the person should have a helmet, whether or not they should be sitting down properly, whether or not they should have a cushion, whether they should be holding on to the handlebar. No.
Oh, yeah, that's not what you're saying.
If you look at pictures coming out of places like India, or even in some countries in Africa where motorcycles are used exactly as transportation, where you hire somebody, you know, you pay somebody to give you a ride on their motorcycle. They're like a taxi, okay?
Yeah.
There are laws governing that. No, it hasn't reached Barbados yet. But I have seen people on motorcycles with children sitting in front of them in addition to sitting behind them. Right.
Yeah.
No. We can wait until something happens to find out whether the law addresses that, whether the person should have a helmet, whether they should be strapped on. For example, and I'm only being ridiculous here, but let us see. I am a father. I am, but let's say I have another child or grandchild, and I'm fussy. I like riding my bicycle. So I strap my child on my back. Well, I have my child in a harness in front of me because that's how I used to carry my daughter. And I go riding. So I don't have a helmet on her, right? Right? So, but you see, and we can come up with all these scenarios and what ifs because we want to say the law is inadequate, right? We want to try ways of saying, I should not do this. Rather than getting people to say, okay, this is a step in the right direction, let's start cutting off some of our bad habits, like parking on the sidewalk, like stopping in places for people with disabilities. Like somebody's asking me, if someone, a person who is disabled using a motorized scooter, will have to wear a helmet.
I want to make something clear here, Dennis.
Yes,
by 2020 or so, it would be international. It is something that being done. All the cars coming out of the market now, they come with the two front glass, not tinted, the two sides, left and right side.
Right side's not, not tinted.
The companies here paint them. The reason for that, they have a lot of reasons. Criminal activity that they need to see who's in the vehicle and with the cameras on the side of the road in front to take pictures.
Pick you up.
That is going to happen. We don't care how we look at it, it is going to happen. So look for the law mills likely to change soon when it comes to that.
And taking the tint off the front windscreen.
Right. Guys need to do that. We got too many guys with the tint on the front windscreen. No tint to be on the front windscreen. If so, I don't have any 75 or 66 at the top. But standing the entire vehicle that you can't see who's in it. And people now getting more darker on the tent because they want to use the cellular phone. So listen, fellas, if you're putting on that tent, you're going to have to take it off because you're going to be monitored. You're going to have to go to NCW. I've seen a few vehicles there already. Last one before the news get here. You see the bicycle thing? I got a problem with the white fender. It's going to be difficult to get fenders for all of these bicycles and so on.
Right.
I can see a reflector at the back and a flashing light at night, a red flashing light.
Yeah.
I ain't got no problem with that. The bell you must have, a light. Some kind of form of light and a bell. But the
2952
regulation, 295 Act tells you about the back. There was always a law, you know, that the bicycles should carry a fender and a white piece at the back.
A white strip at the back,
You have a reflector seat somewhere behind the seat, underneath the seat that could be seen right behind, above the back wheel. That is one. The other thing I think they need to do, somebody got to bite the bullet. Somebody got to bite the bullet and do things. Inform the public that we, the police, ain't going to go out there right now in a hurry. We're going to give you 3 months grace period to get help.
Can't get grace period. Parliament going to have to pass that, sir, wouldn't they?
But
police could give an interpretation to regulation?
The Commissioner of Police are law for you.
I'm just asking you. You were one, you should know. Sir, you will have to get around. Let me have this last word as we go to the news. You're going to have to get around the public perception that this is being done to put money in the treasury and that the police not on the side of the public, which is a perception of the public. And that is what public education and engagement is supposed to remove. The distrust we have for those in authority because it has been abused by too many for too long. Sir, one of the main challenges we face is people who have abused power to the point where they're no longer trusted. the institution they represent is no longer trusted. I've been handed a notice that says the Blackman and Gallup Primary School Parent Teachers Association will be having an emergency PTA meeting this evening at 5:30. 434-1790. Here's a reminder that the Blackman and Gallup Primary School Parent Teachers Association will be having an emergency meeting at 5:30 today at the school. And also, we have a notice here that says the National Housing Corporation advises that its accounts department at Country Road is closed for the remainder of the day. Additionally, the NHC's customer service department will be closed tomorrow, Tuesday, March 13th, and again on Wednesday, March 14th. The management of the NHC regrets any inconvenience and have asked that members of the public conduct their business accordingly. And all other sections of the NHC will remain open for business during those days. So that's the accounts department of the NHC closed to the remainder of today on Tuesday and again on Wednesday. 434-1790. Remember, we go to 2 today and tomorrow. On Wednesday, we go to 1. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, sir.
Magistrates and judges in Barbados should be the best possible example of Barbadian human beings available. After all, their responsibility is to judge the right and wrongness of citizens who have to face them. They should be held to the highest possible standard of professionalism and relevance. They should be tested on an IQ, some kind of IQ basis. And continually so, because you never know how old age could ravage the pertinence of the brain.
Tell me about it.
They should be tested. No, the thing about it is, as a professional, as I've been made to understand, there's a standard called, some professions, all professions, are judged or assessed by some international association as to, you know, whether or not they are good, better, or best. They're called a chartered, for argument's sake, as I was led to believe. Some people are referred to as chartered surveyors or chartered, economists or chartered accountants or engineers or whatever, because they have been assessed over a long period of time as to whether or not they can maintain a certain level of competence within the profession that they practice. Mm-hmm. But not judges. Not judges. They just have to be appointed, or magistrates. They don't have to be appointed by some prime minister or some cabinet or some parliament. And they become, and they hold this office. And there's no continual assessment of their abilities in that particular position. They find on citizens, they determine whether or not a citizen can lose his life or spend time in jail or go pay real money, whatever it is an expense to the citizen of Barbados that has to face them. When that citizen walks into that courtroom, that citizen should be confident that the only person in that room who is competent enough to judge that person, because he has more, better read, he is more intelligent, of higher intellect, quick off the mark, got more life experience, and can judge at any level because he is a better human being, is a judge. Or he is the only person. And you should have that kind of confidence in that person that wears that robe. You should, by definition, because they're judging you. But what is the reality? Huh? What is the reality in Barbados? How has it been ever since Errol Barrow's days? What is the reality? If a judge or magistrate makes a mistake, somebody could pay, you know. Serious. And okay, you got another 3 panel, another set of judges, or 3 or so that will judge on that mistake. And if you err, they got a set of 5 that will judge on that mistake. But all along the line, they're still judges. And if the judge or magistrate was found to be in error, you know what's happened? They don't pay nothing. They don't even get to apologize. They are not punished in any way. If a surgeon, for argument's sake, makes a mistake and he leaves a scissors stop in somebody's belly, or a doctor decides that he prescribed the wrong medication and the person took the medication and cock up and dead. Malpractice. I remember Enron and accounting and the firm Arthur Anderson. They were invested up to their shirt button, as they claim. Because they're not allowed to operate as limited liabilities. That is the kind of confidence you must have in these people's ability to do the job.
Why don't you?
Enron cock up and dead, and Arthur Anderson had to go behind it.
But why don't you have confidence in them?
And who?
The judges.
A judge can make a mistake.
No, sir.
And
no, they will not make a mistake. They will not interpret the law in the way the others did. That's the problem with the law. There is nothing called a mistake in the law.
The judges are not perfect.
Sir, but there's nothing called a mistake in the law.
Okay.
There is nothing in the law called a mistake. That's the premise you have that's wrong.
Have you seen? Okay, so in other words, they are allowed to do whatever they want, and it was never considered a mistake because they are free to interpret things as they think.
They interpreted in another way, yeah. That's the failing of this thing called the law.
The failing of this thing called the court is that you need to establish a certain standard for people who operate and wear that robe. And it has
and
to be consistent, and it has to be internationally assessed, and they have to be punished in some way when they do something that is not appropriate. That is what is wrong with this
sir,
thing.
And
not
interpretation. Sir, hold on. Sir, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. I always try to tell you why...
Come on, man, Dennis, man. You're telling me? Man, ask me, man.
Okay.
Be polite.
No, I'm asking. And this is not a question I'm asking.
You're talking down to me, man.
No, I'm not talking down to you, sir. I never talk down to nobody. Here's the problem that you face with your premise. If a judge or a magistrate or a lawyer breaks the law, they face the law courts. That is the mistake. If a judge does not interpret a charge or interpret a law or interpret the evidence presented, it is not called a mistake. That's the problem. And laws are drafted by lawyers. And they draft the law in such a way that they could argue it in one way or another. That's why a defense attorney could become a prosecutor tomorrow, or attorney general could become a defense attorney tomorrow and take the same law that he wrote to a tribunal and say it is unconstitutional and win.
You know,
it has happened on more than one occasion that I could recall.
You have found an excuse.
It is not an excuse, sir. It is an explanation of what happens. It is an explanation of an inadequate system. Why do you see it in the way you see it and being the only way it could be seen?
Interpretation is one thing. Procedure is another matter that takes place within those four walls, and they can easily be violated as well, too.
So I don't disagree with that.
Even if procedure is incorrect, he is still wrong. And even if he's wrong, there's nothing that can be done to make sure that he's punished in some way, or she.
Because the law says it has to be proven.
If they interpret in some way, or let's say they over, people complain all the time about how some people give people 8 years for minor crimes and 2 years for major crimes and or a slap on the wrist and stuff. There's no consistency across the board. All of these things add up to an environment which, and truly, is not properly defined. Then, okay, it does not properly function in the interest of ordinary citizens. It does not. And it is super expensive to be properly, to be properly utilized. If you really want to use that process and use it to your best benefit, you've got to be prepared to spend real money. It does not work in the interest of average Barbadians. That entire fraternity, that entire environment is designed that way. That is what you have admitted to. Because in the way the laws were designed, it means, of course, you can interpret any which way. And if you find yourself, even in the slightest way, in a questionable position with that same law or those numbers or those laws, you are in serious trouble because anybody can interpret it in any which way, and there really are no procedures that will protect you when you are calling upon the same institution that you thought was there to protect you in the first place. There would be no one there to protect you from it. And it is from that environment that many, many Barbadians thrive. Over 1,227 of them. I count them all. They thrive big time in that environment. And every 5 years, you got 40 of them coming forward and saying, vote for me because I will look after your interests. I want you, Barbadians, to vote for me. I exist in that environment. I make big money because I know, as Dennis Johnson has said, we design the system that way through the laws that we're supposed to adhere to and we want to use to protect you in such a way that they can be interpreted in any which way, and we will never be found wanting for not doing our job appropriately. I can't understand this. Are you saying that they can't find it because the laws are not properly defined? And they say, you know something, you're probably all right. Because when an engineer does something based on a law, you can bet that law got standards of deviation. You know, that law is so well presented that there's absolutely no way he can make a mistake. Because if he does, a plane will drop out the sky. Enough people would die. Huh? When a surgeon goes in there, he has to be very fine as to what he can cut. Otherwise, a man will bleed to death. These people perform at a level of competence that is undeniable because you can measure it. And a man that will fine and tell me that I am wrong or right, or I will spend time in jail, or I can't, is operating on the system of instructions that are so loose that any idiot, apparently, with the coattails could come in and say, you know something, you look at it the wrong way. You cannot be serious! And how long is that going to be obtaining for? You can say, oh, it happens everywhere else in the world, Barbados is no different. You know, all right, but fix that. Surely they can fix that before they come and tell me they know what to do to run Barbados. Surely. Because they've been benefiting over time through that nonsense of a process. And it is a nonsense process. Even Al Barrow himself said, if you want justice in Barbados, my man go find somewhere else to go. It is a nonsense process. And all these people who thrive in it, big time, $500 an hour just to stand up in the hallway and twiddle and you know, that is per client, twiddling on the files, or they have some associate holding up on the files, go turn around and say, we know how we can fix Barbados. Barbados is too blasted stupid to be buying that after all this time. Look, that woman is new. Go to the law court to see what happened inside there. I was once a juror. What do you call it? Somebody sits for the jury?
Yeah, a juror.
A juror, right? A juror, mm-hmm. I think. A jurist is the man that sits behind the bench. A jury is the one that sits for the jury.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I had a chance to go in there and hear some of these things. I only want, could never call me back again. And I saw a process where it was already decided, no questions asked, whether or not the person that was accused was guilty or innocent. I can't go any more detailed than that there, but you can bet by the way that thing took place, you could ask Stetson Barr, because he sat in the same jury, that thing was predetermined. And this idiot decided that when it comes now to go and determine whether the man was innocent or guilty, I decided to go the opposite way. Because I want to convince that two of these people, defense and prosecution, move on down one particular route, whereas in fact it's very likely the guy could have been on the other side. And I was never called to be on a jury again. Never called. And when questioning someone else who has also been on a jury, I was never asked to go back again to say, you know something, if you go up on that jury, you think too much, they're going to left you out. Which suggested, but all them years ago.
Who is the day?
Huh?
Who is the day that going to left you out?
They're not going to call you again.
Who is the day that left you out?
I don't know. The people who decide who was on jury.
Who is that?
I got a letter.
Who is that?
Who is the Electoral and Boundaries Commission? Why don't
so how do you know? How do you know what you said in court?
Because a day after I get out, a friend of mine, or used to be a friend, I don't know, a friend of mine who also wears coattails, said, you know something, I hear you give me a trouble, you ain't getting called again. And so said, so done, have not been called since. And that was, I can't say how long ago it was, I'm only 25 years old. Mm-hmm. And it never happened again. It suggests to me that, you know, there's an industry in Barbados that requires a lot of stupid people to make this thing work. And the more malleable you are, the more they are capable of fashioning the way you think or the things that you're supposed to believe as being right and wrong, determining for you what is morally appropriate or not. Because if they can manage that aspect of these people, they can thrive. And they can tell you one area where that is most certainly the culture, and that is the legal fraternity. They need to have a lot of ignorant people knocking about so that they can somehow mold them into shape and keep them believing that, you know something, we are it. You know, we depend too much on these lawyers, man, to determine what our life should be.
Do you depend on them?
No!
Then, therefore, why are you saying so? And you're the person who over and over chastises me for using the term we, and you go we? Man, let me tell you something. There is something about my voice that has get you upset, and you have decided to jump up and bring out the cudgel. Let me say. You see how I listen? You see how I listen? Let me say to you. The philosophical difference between your approach to changing a problem and mine, why we never see eye to eye, is this. I believe that in order to change a system, one must first understand the system, understand why it works the way it works, understand what the pillars are, and which pillars will cause it to come tumbling down. That is engineering, right? That's how engineers just implode buildings.
Check the building.
Okay. Here's the way I operate. With reasonable men, I will reason. With humane men, will I plead. With tyrants and dictators, I give no quarter. One. Two! And there's a second part to it. The second part to it is this. The things I can change, I will change in my own time. The things I can't change, I will not worry about. Let me say to you, I have looked and sat at the knees of a magistrate, a judge, a person who dealt in the law.
That was your father's brother?
Yes, my father's brother, who was more so my father.
Not, obviously not the first time you're bringing this story.
No, but the reason I'm saying to you is this. I saw him stumble, choke, fall apart on a lot of the things that you talk about. The inadequacy of the law, the interference. I saw him draft a whole letter that said he thought he was being marginalized and degraded because he gave a judgment against somebody who eventually became an attorney general and a chief justice. That's his belief. And he's a man who studied and believed in the law. What I'm saying to you is there are people who understand the inadequacies of the law. And they work to try to correct those inadequacies by writing judgments that are sometimes called dissenting judgments. They face the consequences of doing so, but they try in their own way to change what they see as the injustices of the justice system. The thing is, most of them end up being pauperized, marginalized, and being upset with themselves for seeing the law in a different way. They don't see right or wrong. And I said to you, that's why a gentleman who was known as a human rights lawyer, Ramesh Lawrence Maraj, could become an attorney general and execute 6 or 8 people one morning.
Yes.
And then go back to being a defense attorney with the change of the government and say, well, I wasn't a good lawyer, as y'all couldn't beat me in the court.
I know that you mentioned that. The 8th one that was executed was even offered a proper defense.
Sir,
yes, sir, you come long too.
And the point I am
making. And he didn't spend a day in jail.
Sir, for doing what? For doing what he does? That's his job. And that's my point.
All these people in the States who go to jail for 45 years all of a sudden found innocent. Not because of DNA, but just because of procedural.
They are not found innocent, sir. They are found not guilty. That's the other thing that, sir, the law is. Because there is no perfect system. Sir, before you attack it, learn it. Because there will always be somebody who is more pervasive, more persuasive, and could shout louder than you and me. I give up. Perhaps you should too. Or continue the fight. Because sometimes I do too. Thanks for your call. I keep saying there's something about my voice that agitates you.